From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football. When we get this show started, Dave will do his intro, and I have to mimic, basically, what I kind of parrot what
he does. I don't
know
that you have to. You just do.
And sometimes he can be distracting because he'll do a different voice or a different pitch. Whatever he does, he tries to do something that I need to sort of mimic it. And then the one more distracting thing is when he forgets to mute his phone and the show starts coming through. And you can hear him doing the intro while I'm doing mine. I'm like, ah, he forgot to mute his phone again. And today was one of those things.
This is called a computer. You know that, right?
Was it your phone or computer? I'm not looking at you.
I don't have it up on my phone. It's a black screen. Look at this.
Okay.
Those are my kids. Hey. Well,
see, if you can see, if you're watching on YouTube, thank you for doing that. It's a simulcast just because Dave screwed up. I am looking forward. I cannot see the shenanigans David's doing here. He gets to look at me, but his cameras are like right here.
I'm just staring at the right side of Ryan's face all podcast.
Yeah. Is that my good side or bad side? I don't know.
I don't know that you have a good side.
Probably not. Yeah. At this age, it's just like
it's all falling apart. It's slowly just wax melting.
But we are the Podcast of Champions. We are live on YouTube. We appreciate that. If you want to like and subscribe us over there, that is freaking awesome. We got a lot of questions that you have sent in on their email, which is big10cast@gmail.com. So we love to read your emails. We'll get to all of those. You can also call or text us. I think we just got a text this week. No Zodiac Killer. I did request his address for the FBI in Northern California. He hasn't responded.
Sorry, no. For the gift card.
Oh, for the gift card, yes. Not the not for the FBI.
We are not calling the FBI.
No. We're not trying to solve a 50-year-old serial murder case. 424, it's 50 years old, right? Or is it it's in that range?
Yeah, it's like 70s, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Early 70s.
424-532-0678. You can call us. Leave us a voicemail. People still do that sometimes. Or send us a text. We like that. And you can tweet us at B1G Podcast. And most importantly, though, because now we got a promotion going on, you want to leave us a 5-star review over Apple Podcasting app. It's great if you do it on Spotify. You just can't leave a review, so we don't really get to read any of those. But we love 5 stars over there. If you're listening on Spotify, go in there. Say, hey, Podcast of Champions, 5 stars. Boom. Love it. It's awesome. On Apple, you can do that. And write something funny. And each show, I think, are we doing it?
Each recap show.
Recap
we
show.
We will read the reviews and we will assign a winner. Maybe one, maybe two, maybe multiple. Depends on how many we're feeling that day.
Right. So I have a few gift cards I need to send out. So we'll do that. And the Zodiac Killer, you know, you got to give me your home address and I will send you one as well.
We'll send you a gift card.
Yes.
Just need your home address.
So if you see like a nondescript van outside of your home, like I'm sure it's
don't
the
worry,
gift card
that's
delivery.
That's just your gift card delivery.
Yes.
Don't pay attention to the antennas up top. Just that's normal. All right, we got reviews.
Ready? What's the review?
DuckFan68, Gutless Wonders.
Oh.
I have a question and a comment for you and you. Sorry, not sorry for forgetting your names. First, was it a failure of the person who asked the question last week for a comparison of last year's UW quarterback and this year's Michigan quarterback, or your failure to include a comparison of last year's quarterback to the Michigan D? For example, inquiring minds want to know if Penix will be able to stand up to that defense, or is he big enough to cause the D to choke?
Oh.
My apologies in advance for asking about something that happened last week, since it is probably beyond your ability to recall, based upon your ability to recap games that occurred merely 48 hours prior to your Monday cast.
Fair.
Second, I'm appalled by your lack of guts for not calling out and explaining to the Zodi Stanford grad that a voicemail message is not eligible for my gift card. Well, I'm not afraid of him, her, they, them, and I will even give out my address cryptically, as I know that is how he, she, they, them likes to communicate. Especially with my crack security team that was able to turn my then opponent into the Van Gogh of candidates. P.S. When I mentioned to my crack security team, I'm not sure whether they were on crack or they have the same cognitive skills as myself. But I digress and will ask the person most knowledgeable in this, the first son. No more hints as to my identity. Strive to improve to mediocrity. If you are in D.C. prior to next January, please stop by the East Wing for a chat. Signed, the big guy.
Nice.
Yeah, we'll be able to crack that code. That was good. I like that. Nice. I like cryptic notes, semi-cryptic notes. Mark in Vancouver, Washington. Two B1G to fail. These guys call themselves the foremost experts from the heart of Big Ten country in Los Angeles, California. Tells you everything you need to know about their expertise. Keep it mediocre, gents.
Thank you. All right.
This is from Jasso's phone, from the heart of Big Ten country. Hello, Ryan and Waved Duds. I was sitting at the Boiling Crab on the corner of Kinsley and Glendon Avenue when I realized I could bribe my server, Jasso, with two West Texas mics to use his phone and write a review of this herocious, pause for Ryan.
They were herocious.
Podcast. He looked at me in bewilderment, but when I explained to him that this show is nothing without my chocolate chip cookie recipes and five-star reviews, Jasso obliged. Let's get on with the review. First things first, Waved Duds is the most honest communist you'll ever hear. He is down with the cause, but only if you pay for it. Like how his parents paid for his house. He also understands that communism is full of lazy, balding turds like himself and ultimately accomplish nothing, like this show. Fortunately, he has lucked his way into this podcast where fans like me provide the majority of their content and reason for existing. Honestly, he brings the only thing I enjoy from a UCLA grad, eternal sadness. They can't recruit, they can't win, they can't even fire their coach when they should, and they can't even get a football field on their campus. Why would anyone travel the 2.5 hours it takes to get to the Rose Bowl when servers like Jasso exist? Second, Ryan, a cartoon character that is probably smiling this very second like the lost idiot that he is. Nothing more needs to be said. Last, the show's main attractions are the emails and voicemails. Serial killers, stoners, and other sickos make me tune in every time. If only the Pac-12 hadn't disintegrated into the new look Mountain West, we could have a podcast about all things relating to Stanford's kicker being the only thing that isn't but about them. Take this show as seriously as Waved Duds takes his pre-show preparation. In the end, 5 stars and 2 West Texas mics to Jasso at the Boiling Crab.
I think we have our winner.
Yeah, that's our winner. Yep.
And for the 2 West Texas mics.
To Jasso.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, that's our winner. Okay. So, send in your address, Jasso's phone.
Yeah, to ryan@uscfootball.com. Thanks for doing that. Also want to let you guys know for their survivor pool, you can go to the same place if you're still in it. There's now 17 of you. It's the same link. Just go there. Thanks again to Matthew for putting it together. We won't dock your pay this week because I think you did a nice job. 252 entered. We had 18 going to week 6. One person lost because someone picked USC to win.
I'm sorry. Hold the phone. Did they not win?
They did not win. They lost.
Wait. Were they playing Ohio State or something this weekend?
the mighty Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Oh, God. Was Miller Moss, he must have been hurt or something, right?
No, he played, eh? You betcha.
Was Danton Lynn sick?
Oh, I don't know. He could have, but...
Did Lincoln Riley take a head injury at some point?
There's pianos were falling.
The pianos I think some are hit falling.
Some hit PJ Fleck, some hit, like, yeah. So... We had one loser. Sorry about that. But everyone else is still in there. So very few incorrect picks the last 4 weeks after a bloodbath in weeks 1 and 2. So if you survived, you sort of like you got through the initial storm. Like you're in the eye of the storm. There might be some craziness as we go further on. But keep it going. But thank you, Matthew, for putting all those together. And I do want to thank our sponsor over at MyBookie. It was a more... I really thought I was going to get my comeuppance this week, like especially after the first game. So it's the – you and I both took Oregon to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And
the back door of all backdoors.
They got back – they should have covered early, didn't. Then they did finally cover late, and then they got backdoored, and it was really upsetting. And I was like, you know what? David said you're a little too high on yourself after your 7-1 week, which – I think it was fair. So I'm like, I'm probably going to get crushed. Go 0-2 the first one. I end up with a winning record, 4-3, 4-3-1.
Well, because you were picking against the true cooler of all coolers. Like, if we had picked everything correctly, like, if we'd picked everything the same this week, you would have gone 0-7.
That's true. Yeah. I had to pick, like, against you. But, yeah, so we had a more pedestrian week this week doing our picks. But if you want to get in there and try to do better, you can do that over at MyBookie. And if you haven't made a deposit there yet, use the promo code POC for a first-time 100% initial deposit match. So put in, like, $100 and you would get $200 to play with and do all your bets. And it's fun. You can do the bets kind of like we do, where you're just betting against the spread. If you like over or unders because you think that both quarterbacks stink, which is probably the case in a lot of these Big Ten games, and they're not going to score as many points, you can bet the unders. You can bet in the middle of the games if you want, however you want to do it. Follow along with our picks. Pick against us, each one. Whatever you want to do, have some fun. Get a little juice on the games. I know just for us, it makes it a lot of fun when we're talking about it. I mean, literally, Dave and I are texting back and forth of who's going to cover this, and especially if we have the game picked differently. So it's been a lot of fun.
The only people more interested in the line than us are Dylan Gabriel and the UCLA coaching staff.
Yeah, they're definitely... Yes. We'll get into that in a little bit. It's funny, even in the press box, because I'm like, someone asked me, the guy next to me was like, do you have like a lot of money on these games? Like, no, I'm betting and I'm going against David. So I need to make sure I get these right there. Why do you care about these spreads so much? But I do. But anyway, it's a lot of fun to have juice on the games. Go to MyBookie. You can do it and you can get 100% match of your initial deposit using promo code POC. You can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only at MyBookie.
Beautiful read.
Thanks. It is kind of baffling. Like, I'm thinking of like, why do I care this much? But I do, because it's like, because we get to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a great week for us. I increased my lead. I'm 39-26-1 against the spread. Pretty darn good. You are now dead even, 32-32-1. We did have that one push.
That's right. And we'll get to that push
too. The most annoying kind of game sort of ever. So what we'll do is we're going to do our recap through power rankings going 18 up to 1 this week. No Illinois and no Maryland, and we'll recap all of those. Okay, so should we just get going?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, we have I have a new drop. Number 18.
UCLA Bruins.
Wow. Yeah, so thanks to Shane, he sent that in.
Yeah, it's changed a little bit, so the little grunty sigh at the end is now louder.
Should I play it again, the old one? Yeah, I'll do the old one.
UCLA Bruins.
Wow.
Yeah, the little snore.
Okay, so now.
UCLA Bruins.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a louder snore growl at the end.
Should we let us know in the chat if we should replace it? Because this is very important. Again, they were playing number 2.
Penn State Nittany Lions.
All right. UCLA lost 27-11. Extremely, extremely deceptive final score.
It was neck and neck, right? Like it was like
yeah.
They were going
two score loss. It was 27-3 entering the final drive for UCLA in the fourth quarter. So let's start with table setting. Ethan Garbers was out for this game. Justin Martin, UCLA's backup, was starting at quarterback.
Well, actually, he looked pretty good when he started, right?
Yeah, we'll get to that. Okay. But he looked pretty good. And then UCLA retooled on its offensive line. Both of the two deep left tackles were out, so they were starting to walk on at left tackle, a new center, and moved their center to right guard. But the way I say that makes it sound like that was bad. No, it was actually the best offensive line performance of the season. Somebody probably could have figured this out earlier. But Penn State was also without Nick Singleton. And the distinct impression I got from the entire game is that Penn State was running its base offense and hadn't game planned in the slightest for UCLA and had no interest in showing anything. It felt like they had both agreed before the game, this is an exhibition, we're not going to embarrass you, you guys try not to try too hard, and this will be fine. This is an FCS game, we're all going to enjoy our time, not get hurt. So I think there was some positives to take away from for UCLA. Defensively, it was probably their best game of the year, considering the opponent. They played tough up front. Held the running attack for Penn State to, I think, well under 4 yards per carry. And Drew Aller got deep, I think, three times all to Liam Clifford. But aside from that, mostly kept the ball in front of him. And it never looked too easy for Penn State. Like, it never looked like they were just going to, like, drive down the field in a couple of seconds. So defensively, I think you got to be ecstatic about that, relatively, for UCLA, because things have been so bad. And then offensively, Justin Martin looked better than probably anybody had any right to expect. UCLA installed the game plan that I would say was not in any way designed to win the game, but was instead designed to manage. But I don't even know this is necessarily a bad thing. They were trying to manage Justin Martin early. It's just they clearly hadn't installed anything to actually try to win it, assuming he managed it well at the beginning. Because all it was dink, dunk, dink, dunk, dink, dunk. We're going to screen here. We're going to throw a 2 yard out here. We're going to throw into the soft part of the zone 3 yards deep here. And there just wasn't anything that was going to break a big play except for one wheel route to TJ Harden that was a designed like one read thing. On one hand, yes, they managed their quarterback and their situation pretty well. On the other hand, aren't you trying to win? Like, isn't the whole thing like Mick Cronin for UCLA basketball? He says this thing all the time, which is there's always a way to win a game. Like, even if you're outmanned or whatever, it's a narrow path, but there's always a way to win a game. And it didn't seem like they figured out the way to win this game. And then UCLA spent the last 8 minutes of the fourth quarter running a 17-play drive when they were only down by three scores at the start of that drive with like 8 minutes to go, which in the history of college football, teams have come back to win games or at least put game pressure on the opponent, right?
Yes.
Like, you might not score three times, but you could score twice and then have an onside kick to actually try to get the ball back.
Right.
They didn't do that. They drove down the field, running the ball, throwing dink and dunk the entire way down the field, and Penn State was like happy to let them do that. I don't think it told us much about Penn State. I don't think this game told us much of anything about the Nittany Lions, because I don't think they really I mean they were obviously trying to win. I don't think they were not trying to win, but like they didn't have much installed in their game plans. Like, it wasn't like they were bringing like elaborate pressure packages or really innovative, tricky plays. I mean, the most extreme thing they did was lined up an offensive guard in the slot and then had him come around just to smash Luke Sherman for UCLA. But aside from that, it seemed pretty, you know, one note for their game plan. And they won by double digits because UCLA is not very good.
You know, we've seen, especially, I think, you know, when they say styles make fights, and sometimes, like you said, you're an outmanned opponent, whatever it is, but there is a path to victory. And we've seen, you know, especially in the Big Ten, teams that aren't throwing for 100 yards, but they know that, that'd be really hard to win a game. No, but there's strategies you can do that. You're reducing the number of possessions, whatever it is. And sometimes you try that and you get blown out. Like, it just doesn't work. It blows up in your face. They take the... That's your way to win. Like, you have to come up with some kind of strategy. Like, if this goes our way and, oh, they get that turnover and they only get this many possessions and, you know, that can be your path. And it does seem like UCLA is trying to just not get blown out.
Yeah, well, it's three straight games where I think you could argue fairly that UCLA has surrendered in the fourth quarter when the game is not in doubt. I don't want to put it too strongly. It's not in doubt, but it is like... It's very odd for a coaching staff to just give up when there's still, I don't know, 1% chance that you like, it's probably a 5-10% chance you put some game pressure on them if you really go for it. And it's about a 1% chance that you really have a chance to win at the end. And it's, I don't know, maybe you're allowing the 50% possibility that you get blown out worse, but it's a binary, man. It's win or lose. It's not win or lose close or lose or I mean, yeah. If you were competing from the beginning and you were playing a really competitive game and it wasn't 27-3 entering the fourth quarter, then we can talk about how you manage those final minutes to try to keep it close so you can, you know, have a chance to win. But you were getting blown out. So what's the harm in getting blown out? Like, this is already happening.
Yeah.
Like, anybody who watched the game saw you get blown out for three quarters. So it's just, okay, why don't you try to make it not a blowout by actually trying to win? Like, I don't know. It's bizarre to me. And some people are defending it as a confidence builder and a confidence boost for these guys. And I'm like, the defense got confidence from how they played against a really good Penn State offense for three quarters.
Yeah.
Like, they played pretty damn well. Justin Martin, he walked out with as much confidence based on the first 30 or 45 minutes of the game as he did, you know, in the last 15. Like, I don't think you're doing anything there besides applying lipstick to the pig. You lost bad, and then you scored a junk time touchdown that was, like, you know, for anybody who was paying attention to the game, kind of embarrassing.
Search is going to disagree with you. He says, I mean, Foster gets it. It's not like Vandy could beat Alabama or a team could come back from down 35-10 or something.
And this is the thing. Like, with 8 minutes to go, is it likely that you're going to make that kind of comeback, 24 points? No. But it has happened. Like, I mean, you can go to UCLA's history to find one. Like, UCLA Stanford in 2005, they did that. Like, yeah. They came back from, like, 21 with, I think it was, like, 7 minutes to go. There's precedent for this. But more what I'm thinking about is, like, okay, let's theorize that you're trying to build a program. Let's theorize that you're trying to develop a culture and all that kind of stuff. Like, don't you want that culture to be based on trying to win?
Yeah. And not trying to not get blown out.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, that's soft stuff. I don't really know how much that stuff matters, but it feels like it matters. And anyway.
But I agree with your take on Penn State. I don't think that they were trying. It was almost like this was an FCS game. They're going to put more emphasis into going to Los Angeles this weekend.
Well, even the Singleton thing, it sounded like he was. So somebody reported, I think it was Matt Zenitz from our site, who reported the day before, he's likely to be able to play. And then they held him out the entire game. And it's just like, well, it doesn't sound like that injury is serious. If this had been a real game, would he have played?
A real game. That's so funny.
No, but I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
I know what you're talking
from,
about.
Yeah. From their perspective, like, were they just like, oh, we can rest him because we don't need him?
Yeah. But we have Penn State number two. I think very impressive so far. Like, yeah, there was a little, you know, hiccup. You think, oh, Bowling Green could have beat them and stuff. But we'll talk about Ohio State. But this is looking like, you know, I think the top four teams right now are looking all really solid. So I think a big test this weekend, obviously going on the road. But we'll see what happens with Penn State there. But they've been impressive. So I think there could be some fun races here. We just don't want to see. You don't want to see too much parity. Like, we kind of have a top four now, and that's good. There's a big mess after that. So all these rankings, we're not really sure what to do. But we don't want to see those teams kind of beat each other up also, and then everybody's just in a mess.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
We'll see. Okay. Next up, we have number 17.
Purdue Boilermakers.
They were at Camp Randall taking on number 13.
Wisconsin Badgers.
Were they at Camp Randall? Are we certain they showed up?
Maybe not. Yeah. Oh, by the way, we both took Penn State minus 28 and got it wrong.
Yes. And you bring that up because we picked differently on this one.
This one we picked differently.
Yeah.
One of us got it right. One of us.
What was the spread?
Okay. So the spread, which is how many points the Las Vegas people that build all those casinos think one team is better than the other. They thought Wisconsin was a 14 points better than
Purdue. And you know what? They were
only
three times as much as that in this one, a little over three times. Wisconsin won 52-6. Did they find a little something with Braden Locke, by the way?
He looked pretty good the first half against USC. Then they kind of shut him down.
I mean, but like, he's after watching him when he had to take over kind of suddenly for Van Dyke, he didn't look so good. But in the couple of games since then, he's looked okay. Like, he's kind of looked the part.
The second half against USC, not as much, but man, he was good in this one.
Yeah. Well, anyway, they blew out Purdue. Purdue sucks. Purdue's real bad. Purdue's a contender for the bottom slot.
That's good. We have to have some kind of argument. David feels very strongly about UCLA being the worst team, but I mean, Purdue is putting up like big numbers as far as like showing that they could be the worst team.
Yeah. I can't justify it until UCLA actually wins another football game. But rest assured, Purdue's like, They're both tied for 18 right now.
UCLA's covering spreads, at least.
That is true.
We're Purdue. Now, maybe they're only trying to cover spreads. Like, was Purdue coming out trying to win, and that's why?
Yes, yes. Purdue is trying to win football games. They tried to win against Nebraska. That's why they gave up 28 second-half points. They were trying to win this game, so they gave up 52. Wisconsin thinks they're trying to win, which is why Wisconsin continues to play hard. Penn State didn't think UCLA was still trying to win at the end of that game, so they put in their second-string defense with 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're still talking about Penn State. Wisconsin's a lot better than Purdue. Purdue is a big, hot ass.
And I don't think either one of us were as high on Wisconsin kind of coming into the season. They played a good first half against USC and then just sort of fell apart.
I was pretty high on Wisconsin. I had them beating.
Oh, yeah, you were. I was not.
I had them beating Oregon and Ohio State, yeah. I think. Or Penn State.
Yeah, that was
Oregon and
dumb.
Penn State.
No, but I think this is, I don't know if this is a get-right game. Purdue's terrible. But things hadn't been going exactly, you know, Wisconsin's way. I think this is sort of like something you can kind of build on going into things. I mean, I think you just have to take care of business against a bad team. When you beat a team that bad, even how horrible they are, you have to be doing a bunch of things right.
Yeah.
So I think Wisconsin did. There's a, you know, I know they said that the competition between Locke and Van Dyke was close, but that was your starter and he's gone. And sometimes that's like a bit of a blow. And maybe you can kind of build around this. And you know, we've seen them get some explosive plays, which they weren't really doing earlier on the season. Maybe they can do that. It can be more of an explosive play team. Still try to play good defense, you know, so some positives here. I don't think they're going out and beating Ohio State and Oregon, like you said, you said Oregon, Ohio State, right?
Yeah, who knows?
Okay, man. We'll see.
Penn State,
okay. But I think it was very disappointing to have an 11-point lead at halftime and lose in L.A. last week. Come back home, take care of business. I'm sorry about Purdue, but holy crap, are they awful. I don't know what you can do. And the people in the chat are saying, you know, can UCLA schedule Purdue? That game needs to be on the schedule. Like,
I think Purdue needs to do some soul searching because they look at what Indiana just did when they hired a real head coach and provided him with the resources necessary. And it's not like Indiana is significantly better situated than Purdue in the grand scheme of college football. Purdue took a swing at Ryan Walters, and it's, you know, it's the two viable strategies for hiring a new head coach: hire somebody who's proven, or hire an up and coming coordinator and hope he's gonna work out. It hasn't, probably won't. So look at his contract and see if there's a way to get out of it this offseason, then try again. I mean, I think that's they're going nowhere.
Yeah. Matthew saying, is Walters on the hot seat? I think he has to be. I don't know. I mean,
in modern college football, and with, you know, the likelihood that things are going to get even more strained for the bottom of these super leagues as they get more and more.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Indiana might be punching its ticket for staying in the, you know, upper tier. Purdue, well, who knows? So yeah. I think there's going to be more pressure as this thing accelerates for teams to get out of bad situations quicker.
All right, let's go. We got number 16.
Northwestern Wildcats.
And they're hosting number 4.
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey, folks. I'm from Indiana.
So good.
It's so good. So speaking of the killer Cignetti, he went into Northwestern with his compatriots. And what were you doing?
Oh, we got this one right.
Yeah, but you're just so eager to share your spread picks. Whatever. Who cares? It was a closer game than I was expecting. For a long portion of this.
Yes. Indiana's done that a little.
Yeah.
And then they just blow you up.
They went into the fourth quarter in a very, very neck and neck close game, but then put it together in the final quarter to beat the spread, 41-24. You know, Northwestern, I thought, was a little bit better offensively than I was expecting in this game. They were able to move the ball up and down the field quite a bit more. And I don't know if that was because Indiana's defense has been pretty darn good this year. I don't know if that was they didn't you know, necessarily have this one, you know, circled on their, you know, it's hard to maintain intensity game to game. What I find impressive about Indiana is that in a game where they didn't necessarily have their A game, they were still able to win and cover in the end, in a, you know, strange Northwestern environment. Curtis Rourke was great again. Elijah Surratt is a stud. It's amazing, you know, watching these guys come up a level, you know, because Curtis Rourke was Ohio, Elijah Surratt was at JMU, and not just look like they belong, but look like they're, you know, in the upper echelon of those positions in this league. That's been really impressive. I think that's a product of coaching, obviously. I think that's a huge part of it, but it's just a testament that a lot of times you can get talent in some strange places. And Indiana did a great job evaluating, because Elijah Surratt was a holdover from Cignetti from JMU, but Curtis Rourke was just an eval, and he had torn his ACL the previous year, didn't look as good last year. So being able to snag him and say, no, that's my guy, that takes a little bit of projection. So I will credit that to coaching, credit that to evaluation, because I'm in the bag for Cignetti. Obviously, a little bit of it could be luck, but still, super impressive start to the year. Indiana is 6-0.
You know what that means? Bowl eligible.
That's right, baby.
Already. They were 3-9 last year.
They should be setting their sights a little bit higher than that, though, right?
I think they're, yeah. I don't think they're going to like cruise to a 6-6 regular season there. Short Round says, reminder to like and subscribe or your team will become worse than Purdue. Yes, please do that to our YouTube channel. And Big Bob is saying, how has Cignetti been so successful when Tom Allen didn't recruit and left the cupboard bare?
He brought in a shitload of transfers.
Yeah. No, and I think you can turn coaching is super important in college football. It just is. Like, there's, you have a leader, you have a vision, you get guys excited, you put them in positions to succeed, but you need talent too. And with the transfer portal, you can do that. So if you are a very good coach, you can bring in your kind of guys. Maybe not the, you know, they're not the five-star dude or whatever, but guys that would work well in your systems. Your systems are very good, and you can out-scheme and then have good enough athletes to beat teams. And you're just going to, you know, sleepwalk through games like you were, like they were with Tom Allen, then, yeah, that's not going to happen. This is not
Tim Allen, not Tom Arnold. Tom Allen, currently Penn State's defensive coordinator.
Yeah. He's a man with a plan. Like Dave said, he's a killer, like an absolute killer. Brought in a bunch of dudes from JMU, and boom, here you are. And very impressive to see. Now, I don't know, what's it going to look like against an Oregon or Ohio State or something, if that, you know, something like that down the road? We'll see, but this has been very impressive.
I mean, here's what they have. They have Nebraska and Washington back-to-back at home. Washington's going to be a really good game.
They're better now.
I'd have them favored over Nebraska, though.
Yeah.
And then they've got Michigan State on the road. They'll be favored.
By far, yeah.
Michigan at home, they'll be favored. And then it's Ohio State on the road. Like, 9-1 going into that game?
Yeah.
I think 9-1 is probably the, like, aggregate that you would find.
Yes.
But potentially, I mean, they're not going to be huge dogs in any of those games.
No.
Not going to be, I think, even mild dogs in any of those games. Like, they're, I don't know. It's a good team.
For sure. West Texas Mike, who knew that Kirk Cignetti would be the Big Ten's coach prime? No, there's a lot more. He's
got some juice. He's a real coach.
I'm not saying Coach Prime isn't. I think he can be, but he's more about, there's a lot of hype and stuff with that. Cignetti was the opposite of that. He just came in and was like,
Colorado has had some moments, has had some flashes, but it has never looked top to bottom as well coached as Indiana does.
Yeah. And they're doing great things. I mean, Colorado's doing a lot better. Cignetti is the guy that comes in. He's like the local crime boss. Like, he's in like some south suburb of Chicago, and just comes in there, and they're always taking the table scraps from everybody else, all the different fiefdoms throughout Chicago and their different mafia organizations. And he's just like, and they're like, well, you can't do this because they run this territory. He's like, no, we're going to run it now. And he's like, oh, well, they do that. No, we're going to run it now. He just comes in. He didn't come in and announce it. He just said, this is how this is going to go down. And then he just go do it. He's a stone cold killer. Zodiac Killer would love him.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so props to him and props to Indiana. I think only two FBS teams are bowl eligible now, and they are one of them. All right, number 15 we have...
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
This was a, you know, for Jonathan Smith going back to the state of Oregon. They were taking on the number 3...
Oregon Ducks.
All right. I've got a question for all Oregon fans and maybe even local investigators in the state of Oregon.
Yeah.
It's not even really a question. It's a demand. Prove to me that Dylan Gabriel is not point shaving. this is the second straight week of... All right. So against UCLA, they're driving. They're up 28-3 going into the end zone. At the end of the first half, and he throws one of the worst pick sixes I've ever seen in my life. Like
the UCLA one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To Brian Addison.
That was the cover.
Like a
that
little duck. Play. Like could not have been thrown better to Brian Addison. Returned 95 yards for a touchdown, 28-10.
Yeah.
In this game, in the first quarter. So the game's not really in doubt at that point. It's just it's in the beginning stages of the game. Oregon's a heavy favorite. He throws an interception on the Michigan State one, and then two drives later, he throws an interception to the Michigan State 2. Like two more interceptions into the end zone. That's the only reason this game wasn't a cover. Like the only reason.
Yeah, we both took Oregon minus 24.
Oregon was far superior to Michigan State in this game. Finally.
Michigan State looked terrible.
Yeah. Finally, Oregon's running game looked explosive. Like this was the first time this year where it was getting chunk plays. Jordan James was just getting out there and getting big chunks of yardage. And that really unlocked something for this offense. Aiden Childs didn't throw an interception, did fumble the ball away on the goal line. You know, you win some, you lose some.
But this was fewer huge mistakes from him in this game.
But the hated Tommy Schuster comes in at the end of this game and he does a UCLA at the end of the Penn State game. He drives down the field and scores a touchdown. And he's an enemy now in my house because, look, I love that for you, Michigan State fans. But you know the same deal that I know about UCLA's win against Penn State. This wasn't a 21-point game. This was a 28-point game. And it just
should have been more.
Yeah, and it should have been more. But anyway, Michigan State, they were not equipped for this game. They were not. They had nothing. They had no answers defensively for what Oregon was trying to do. Oregon had 213 rushing yards, 264 through the air. Dante Moore came in for a little bit. That was fun.
Oh, okay. Is he the backup right now?
He's their backup. I think so. They brought in the other guy. What's his face? Novosad in the previous game, but this one they brought in Moore. Tez Johnson's really good. I love that they can now throw him the ball without hearing the story of, you know, every time he...
Oh, my God.
Like, every time he catches a ball, he has to hear that he's Bo Nix's adopted brother. And it's just like, I'm sure he's grateful to that family, but also, like, he's a really good player in his own right and should just get, you know, credit for being a really good player. And I think he's finally getting that, so that's nice to see and hear. Oregon looked fine. They looked a little bit like... a little bit like what Penn State looked like against UCLA. Like not really, you know, showing everything, trying to, you know, get their run game finally working. I think that was a priority for them in this game, and they did.
Yeah. I know that people pointing out Oregon was up 21-0 and threw two picks into the end zone. Yeah. I think yet another Duck fan was saying that in his NIL deal, David, he has to help Division Street win bets. So I think Division Street is betting against Oregon. So then Dylan Gabriel throws picks into the end zone. It's the easiest way to like...
It's part of the contract.
Yeah, that's part of his contract.
To be clear, I'm kidding and I am not accusing Dylan Gabriel of point shaving.
It sounds like you are.
I'm not.
Because you texted me that. You wrote it in the notes.
It's a joke.
You've said it on the show. It can't be a joke every aspect of this thing.
Every aspect is a joke.
Big Bob, what happened to Aiden Childs? Heralded as the chosen one, now looks cheeks. Spent too much time with DJU.
I think he's just young. I would say the big problem.
Huge ass.
The big problem right now is he is not
good.
He's not taking care of the ball.
Yes.
Like, I think there's some aspects of his game that are good. He can throw a nice ball and he can run it and he's pretty athletic. But like the way certain guys like just kind of inherently know to, you know, I'm going to throw this ball away. I'm not going to make a big mistake into coverage. I'm not going to, you know, hold the ball away from my body. He's not taking good enough care of the ball. And I think until he starts doing that, there's going to be a hard ceiling on even what his athletic gifts will give him.
Yeah, I felt like this was one. Oregon has kind of played with their food a lot, except when it was Oregon State, right? Then they were like, okay, we're going to play this game, and we're going to cover the spread, and we're going to do it. I thought because of the Jonathan Smith factor, they were going to come into Eugene and just get curb stomped. And they kind of were, but like you said, I think there was some point shaving going on. Oregon looked good enough. Like David accused Dylan Gabriel of actual point shaving. If the FBI, once you're done with the Zodiac Killer, if you want to investigate this, you can do that too. David Wood says he has proof, tweets from Oregon Duck fans.
To be clear, I do not say that.
Oh, I thought you did.
There is no serious accusation of point shaving on this podcast. I love Dylan Gabriel, and I think he's an honorable man.
Ah, nice. Okay. So, yeah. But I think Oregon's got some tougher tests coming up. This was not one of them. But they're doing what they need to do, except covering spreads when we think they're going to cover spreads. Okay. Let's move on. We have number 14.
Maryland Terrapins.
Snap, 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 snap. Snap, snap, snap. They were on a bye. We talked about number 13, Wisconsin already. We got number 12.
Iowa Hawkeyes.
That one just fires me up every time. Oh, yeah. It's just the energy that Shane's wife has and the pump-up song. It's awesome. I don't remember a lot about this one. It was kind of a blur. They were taking on number one.
The Ohio State Buckeyes.
Based on the drops alone, this should have been a closer game.
I thought for the longest time I was going to cover this in like the shittiest way possible, that it was going to be like a 17-0 blowout, but like not really feel that way.
Yeah.
But instead, Iowa.
You were very, very wrong.
They stopped being able to offense at all in the second half. This was, what was that? 2017 Cal, 2018 Cal. Should just never try to offense.
Oh, yes. That was the.
That's what was going on here. Cade McNamara. Not very good. Brendan Sullivan, when he came in, actually looked like he had a little bit of a pulse at the end of this game. Like, it looked like, you know, hey, maybe something. But yeah, I mean, their offense was horrible. In the first half, they were able to kind of, you know, make it hard for Ohio State, but then it stopped being hard in the second half. I mean, this game was not interesting. Ohio State's just a lot better than Iowa, and they just sat on them. And then slowly sucked the life out of that defense. And I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of like, you know how this happens for us midseason where we've got a preseason estimation of a team.
Yeah.
And then it starts to change a little bit because of how they do in the early games. And then, but if you'd asked me preseason, what do I think will happen in this game? It would have been this.
Yeah.
Like I never bought this Iowa offense preseason, and then, oh, they look okay. Oh, maybe. But no, the same thing. And it's Kirk Ferentz, and he's not going to try to score. And if you're not going to hold Ohio State to like 10 points, you're not going to win that game like that. So you have to, you know, have something. You have to have some ability to score. And they didn't.
No.
And it didn't seem like they were even interested in it at certain points.
No, it was sort of like, well, this could be 7-7 to, you know, in the fourth quarter, and maybe we'll like return a punt for a touchdown or something. It's like, that's what it seemed like the attitude was going to this one. You're like, are you insane? Like, no, like you have to get out of your comfort zone to try to beat what is a juggernaut team. And, you know, you talk about the styles and everything, and this is what we've seen in years past, because we've been covering this conference for so long. The Big Ten West teams could do that to each other.
Yeah.
And the best of it will emerge, and then they would play like Ohio State in the championship.
Yeah, but how have you not realized this?
Get
you've
destroyed.
You've got to try something else against Ohio State. You can't just try to. I don't know.
Yeah, like, Jeremiah Smith, hot damn.
Punting is not winning against this team.
Jeremiah Smith was like, he looks like the statue of David, you know, Michelangelo's David, but he's like super athletic and can catch everything. And it's ridiculous. Yeah, this was not a good showing from the Hawkeyes, but I just think it shows that Ohio State is really freaking good. I picked them to go 12-0. I picked them to cover the 20.5 point spread. David was a non-believer, and yeah, there was no chance of a backdoor cover. Yeah, Iowa scored at the end against the second and third stringers, but they were already up enough. That would have been a nasty backdoor cover if there was something going on. But it was only 20.5. Honestly, if it was like 21.5, I might have thought differently. But I'm like, three touchdowns, it seems like the bare minimum that Ohio State's going to win this game by. And they did. One other note I forgot to mention about the Indiana-Northwestern game. And Matt Fortuna does a good job. He said history was made in Evanston. Indiana-Northwestern was the first meeting between two FBS teams that each have 700-plus losses. Isn't that interesting?
That's amazing.
Did you care about that?
No, it was awesome.
I wanted to bring that one up.
I got to bring up one other thing.
Okay.
Because kind of just to my point about how you have to play against Ohio State, there were two second quarter drives that ended at midfield where Iowa chose to punt in an obvious go for it situation. One was 4th-and-1 at the 50, and they punted. They punted from the 50 on 4th-and-1.
You can't.
And the other one was from the Ohio State 49, and it was 4th-and-6. That one's slightly more defensible. You cannot punt in either situation when you're going against Ohio State. You cannot.
No.
You have to drive and try to score.
Right. You can't just, you're playing field. No, you don't play field position against the team that's just going to keep scoring on you. Like, no.
Yep.
You have to try, and it's just like not part of, and maybe that'll change, because before you could do that and still win your division. So there was like, maybe it's a more defendable position because you could win the West by doing that.
Yep.
You're not going to do that now. So do you want to try to win the conference? Then you need to try to like actually score against some of these juggernaut teams. And maybe the Vanderbilt thing, was Vanderbilt like punting on any 4th-and-1 anywhere? Like, hell no. Like, they were going to, that was balls to the wall. We're going to try to beat Alabama.
Yep.
And I'm not saying Iowa could have, but that was your path. Like, it, like you said, Mick Cronin said, there's a way to win every game. Playing your ABC game was not the way to win this one.
No.
All right. We have number 11. But by the way, Ohio State's really freaking good.
Yeah, they are.
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
They were on a bye. The game I was at, we have number 10.
USC Trojans.
And they were in Minneapolis taking on number 8.
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
I do like that drop too.
My big takeaway from this one, I mean, Minnesota won 24-17 as expected.
Yes.
I mean, everyone could have written that in. If USC, so they fixed one side of the ball this offseason, right? The defense clearly a lot better.
It's a lot better.
It's not
this
great.
Was their worst defensive
but
game.
Now I think it's just clear. They need to get rid of their offensive coordinator and hire a new one. And I think if they do that, there's something to like here. And I think, you know, this type of game in your first year in the Big Ten, like going on the road into a hostile environment against, you know, one of the toughest teams in the Big Ten historically. I mean, they won a national title, I think, back in, I think it was like 1950.
They have a lot of Big Ten titles and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a long time ago.
But one of the toughest.
They're up on the stadium.
One of the toughest historical programs in the Big Ten. And to go in there and play a one-score game, I mean, you can see, like, if you just follow this path, and as Lincoln Riley said after the game, you know, there's a lot of good here. There's a lot of good with this offensive line. But if you just follow the path, I think within, I mean, I don't want to, like, overshoot it too much, but I think within, like, 5 to 7 years, they'll be winning games like this. Like, I think USC will have a chance to win a game like this in the next 5, maybe 7 years. And that's exciting, I think, if you're a Trojan fan. This, I mean, there's no moral victories, right? But, like, when you're talking about moral victories, this is close to one as you can get. Minnesota, man. My impartial assessment of the final drive or two, there was a horrible holding call that went against Minnesota, and then there was a horrible PI call that went against USC. They were both horrible calls. Just want everyone to know. And second, the touchdown was the most obvious touchdown live I've ever seen, and it's absolutely egregious they didn't call it a touchdown on the field. But at the same time,
they should have never overturned.
Kind of crazy they overturned it because the ball comes out at one point and like there's some weird shit going on. Like it probably should have been just a play stands it's called. Doesn't really matter because it should have been like
right.
Watching it live, you're like, wait, how did they signal that down at the 1-inch line or whatever?
Yeah.
His entire torso is in the end zone. But anyway, they played a very close game with Minnesota on the road. Because USC's got a bad offensive line and they're not doing anything to compensate for it. And, you know, Miller Moss is a decent quarterback. He is not Caleb Williams. He is not going to be able to compensate for that offensive line on his own. And Minnesota was able to get pressure on him, force him into some bad decisions at times. And the end result is that this was pretty even game and it could have gone either way, which is maybe the biggest, like if we're talking seriously now, probably the biggest indictment of Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, that was
which is bad. This shouldn't have been an even game because you've got 2x the talent that Minnesota has, and you've had now two full off seasons to build this thing, and this is what you're putting out there. Ooh, buddy.
Yeah, their road efforts have not been great. They played a lot better in the second half against Michigan, but Minnesota and PJ Fleck embattled, lost his last six Big Ten games. They stormed the field afterwards, David. I've seen some field stormings. You know, they were very, very excited for this one. PJ Fleck celebrated it like it was the national championship. And kudos, because I think what I like, Fleck, the kind of row your boat thing sort of like wears on you a little bit sometimes. But they had a plan. And this was the same. We talked about having a plan, a path to victory.
I love the balls of going for the touchdown.
They went for it on fourth downs. Go for the touchdown, not kick the field goal. USC had 9 possessions in this game. Limit the number of possessions. They did a really good job of sort of attacking USC, where there was more missed tackles in this one than they've had all season, and they just kept running the ball. They dropped a bunch of dudes into coverage and rushed 3, sometimes 2 guys. 3 rushers were getting pressure on Miller Moss, and he was having to get rid of the ball early.
Yeah.
So when you only have 9 possessions, 3 of USC's possessions ended in turnovers in Minnesota territory. Yeah. Like, they moved the ball well. They converted 7 of 11 third downs. Like, usually that's a recipe for success. Yeah, 2-3 and outs. Both of those drives start off with a sack and a negative play.
He's not doing enough to compensate for that offensive line.
He needs to do more. But Minnesota was very smart about make USC – take away explosive plays and make them not make mistakes. He really needed to run the ball more because afterwards he said that they were run blocking well. I don't know if they were. Minnesota was just very light in the box, dropping guys back. USC's been good with explosive plays. Their longest play from scrimmage was a 21-yard run by Quentin Joyner that he fumbled on. That was their longest play. So
no, it was,
Minnesota was smart, and they made him not make mistakes, and they made a lot of mistakes on the road, and you lose
it. It was exactly what Minnesota wanted them to do.
Yes.
Like, we're going to let you dink and dunk. We're going to let you do stuff, you know, within, you know, underneath the safeties, but eventually we're going to hope you make a mistake, and they did, just repeatedly.
Made a lot of mistakes,
A lot of penalties, too.
Yes.
And, I mean, I thought PJ Fleck going for the touchdown was a really smart call on the 1-inch line, because even if they don't get it, if you kick the field goal there, I mean, you saw it on the ensuing drive. It doesn't take a Lincoln Riley offense that long to get down the field, and they got into field goal range. So it was a really good decision, I thought. And he clearly needed this one. He was acting like a psychopath on the sidelines, which I think is kind of par for him, but he was stamping around. It was pretty cool. Lincoln Riley after the game got his diaper got bunched or something, but he got really upset, with a reporter. who shot
my reporter,
his reporter, for having the temerity to ask a defensive player if what he saw on the touchdown run at the end of the game. And Lincoln Riley is called that unprofessional. Lincoln Riley is the one of the biggest babies with the press I've ever seen. And particularly like when things are not going his way, which they're not. USC is currently 3-2 and like looking much more like a 7-5 team than a playoff contender. I don't know. Was this what USC fans signed up for? Like, is this what everyone was getting when they had that big press conference with the band in front of the monitors and had him standing there looking like an idiot?
I think the 3-2 is probably what people expected, but just like Lincoln Riley's first year, we talk about Kirk Cignetti 6-0 after 3-9 last year. USC was 4-8 and they win 11 games and go to the Cotton Bowl and win the Heisman Trophy. Like, then you don't want to see a 7-5 season after that. After beating LSU and, you know, really having a good shot to beat Michigan on the road, you expect like, okay, well, now you're going to have some upward trajectory. It's gone the other way. So I think just the way it's played out, you sort of raised expectations and then, you know, and then this was a very bad loss for USC, like their worst effort overall. So not what they signed up for. No, they're not very, the message board people I've been dealing with, David, not been very happy.
No. I mean, it's not happy when you see somebody with a leaking diaper just on a stage like that. But I mean, let's just reevaluate things now. Do you think maybe we need a critical reevaluation of the god Clay Helton and his tenure in at Heritage Hall?
I'll mute you on this one, so it's not, you know,
23-9 through 32 games.
Yes,
versus 22-10 through 32 games.
We'll keep. You could do this next year and see what happens, because things don't go so well.
We're cutting it off at 32 games. We will not continue this evaluation past this.
So does Chip Kelly's record improve now that he's with Ohio State? And we said that he needed to win like 35 straight games.
Here's what I want to see. I want to see Lincoln Riley. I want to see Lincoln Riley go to Georgia State. And then you can have the best rivalry in sports. Georgia Southern, Georgia State, two former USC head coaches coaching at the level they should be at.
What was the – did Georgia State beat – was it Georgia State that beat Vanderbilt?
Yes.
Then Vanderbilt beat Alabama. Alabama beat Georgia.
Georgia State wants a piece of that shit.
Yeah, Georgia's like, we want Georgia next. it's pretty awesome. All right, but big – I mean, if you're a Minnesota fan, huge win. Like, they were very excited. It was a fun stadium. I'd been there like 15 years ago or something, but the environment's cool. Like, I got to see a bunch of my college friends there. We had a fun time and just kind of walking around. Like, it's neat to have it like – UCLA should have something like this, like on campus. There's bars. You walk to the stadium, your tailgate.
Yeah,
thanks. I went to a wedding tailgate. Some people that met at USC got married, and then from there, and had a lot of fun. James and Olivia. So shout out for them.
Oh, UCLA just got stuck with another 9 a.m. kickoff. UCLA at Rutgers is at 9 a.m. Breaking news, baby.
So Rutgers is playing UCLA at 9 a.m. and USC in LA at 8 p.m. USC against Maryland. That's a 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah.
Coming a couple weeks. It's a good USC's had some good kickoff times.
Oh, yeah.
I like this. Yeah. You were saying, oh, maybe that was bad. Okay. Let's see. So we did that. We have number 9,
Michigan Wolverines.
Wow. Scratch.
In a rematch of the national championship game, going to Seattle to take on number 6.
Washington Huskies.
We got a quarterback change for Michigan. The great Jack Tuttle came into this one and didn't look very good, but he did move the ball okay, or at least a little bit better through the air.
How funny is it we're in the Big Ten, David, and you can say like, hey, I think we found our quarterback. And it's not like
for under 100 yards.
Because Gardner Minshew came in and threw for like 350 in the second half. No. Dude throws for under 100 yards. Like,
but he actually looks like he can throw a football.
I think we got our guy. Like, this is just very different than what we've been used to covering. Usually, the fourth string, like UCLA quarterback, comes in and throws for 400 yards. Like, oh, that guy's actually good.
Yeah.
No. 96 yards, and we're like, here's our dude. We got him.
So this was once again a Washington game that was much, much closer than it should have been.
Yeah.
Like, the underlying stats of this game, it's like, Washington should have won by like three touchdowns. What happened here? They eventually won 27-17. It's very good that no obvious pianos fell on Jed Fish's head during the course of this game. I don't know that he could deal with another piano-related concussion. Their run defense was a little bit leaky, but other than that, I thought they played really, really well, more or less across the board. Jonah Coleman was good again. Will Rogers played a good game.
I think there's like, past pianos. What's the word I'm looking for? Like you, reciprocal pianos or something, just because you see how good he is. Like, why were you not doing this earlier?
Yeah. Yes.
Jed Fish, more pianos.
Washington can't kick field goals. I think it's approaching an epidemic. They missed two in the first half of this game. Finally made one at the end.
There you go.
But yeah, I mean, this was it probably should have been a bigger win for Washington, but you'll take it, obviously, against a top 10 team at home. But there's a reason Washington was favored, and there's a reason they were comfortable by the end of this game.
I'm concerned about Michigan because I didn't think Washington was that good. I thought they played well. Like you said, fewer pianos or piano-related incidents were happening in Seattle in this one. We didn't see the egregious, like, why the hell were you doing that? Considering you missed some more field goals and everything after three it was last week. Michigan was at home for five straight games, and I was like, okay, and there's some advantage to that. This is your first trip. This was a big trip. You got to go to Seattle, and it just didn't look right. And the fact that you've had all this time with Alex Orji, he's just way too good of an athlete. You can't tell me there's not something you can do to make him look like a good quarterback. There just has to be something. And then you're bringing in Jack Tuttle, who's been around for 50 years and throws for under 100 yards, and you're like, here's our guy. Like, I'm concerned with what's going on the offensive side of the ball for Michigan, because you don't want the Iowa game to happen when you play Ohio State. Like, you need to give yourself a chance, and there just doesn't seem like there's an offensive chance with Michigan's doing that. You can do some of this crap at home and play defense and get a punt return, whatever, like that kind of stuff, but it's going to be hard. I think it was John Wilner that tweeted out, David, and I know you were pro super conference and things like that. And some of us were a little more concerned about the travel. But the Big Ten teams that have traveled two or more time zones are now 1-8 in straight up.
Is that good?
It's not good. The only win was Indiana coming to the Rose Bowl, but outside of the FCS level of the Big Ten, no one's won on the road like that, going through two time zones. So it's a little bit of a concern. I know you didn't think it was. You just thought, just put the best teams in the same conference. Doesn't matter where they live. I fought you on that one, but it's not looking good. This was not a good – I mean, it should have been worse than like you said. So a little concerned with Michigan in this one. And you're hoping, if you're Washington, this is something you can build on, because they've looked a little shaky. I mean, they had that road loss at Rutgers. They probably should have won that one. But maybe this is sort of like, okay, they replaced everyone. They didn't look as good in the beginning of the season, but maybe they can build on this and get some momentum going into things. Because, there's some tough games coming up for Washington too.
Yep, absolutely.
I don't know. But, yeah, what did you think of the stat, the 1-8 on the road?
I mean, it stands to reason. And, hey, which teams have to travel multiple time zones the most for their road games in the league?
The West Coast.
Oh, yeah. Huh. So it's having a competitive impact on the field? Knock me over with a feather. Damn, I had no idea. You're saying, so like games against Minnesota that you might otherwise be favored in, if, say, Minnesota was located in like the Pacific time zone,
yeah,
that it's harder?
It's harder for sure.
Good God.
Yeah.
Well, this makes me rethink everything.
All right, we got one more game. We're going way long on this. Number 7.
Rutgers, Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
And they were on the road taking on number 5.
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
An incredible amount of nothing happened in this football game.
This was the late game.
This was the most Big Ten
football game I've seen this year. And this is worrying for Nebraska particularly, because they just played before this the most Big Ten first half I'd seen all year, which was Nebraska-Purdue. This was very similar. Nebraska scored 14 points in the first half and then didn't come close to scoring again. Just sitting on the ball. And Rutgers never came close to scoring. Ethan Kalikmanis looked much, much more like the Minnesota version in this one. Wildly inaccurate. And Nebraska was able to contain Kyle Manungai in this running game. And they had nothing. Like, forced to throw the ball, he was not able to throw it. But Dylan Raiola didn't look good on the other side either.
No.
He threw a bad pick, looked out of sorts. This was, this was not a an offensive showcase. Nebraska won 14-7. They didn't cover. They pushed, thanks to a late Rutgers touchdown. But at no point did I really think Rutgers had a chance to win the game. But at the same time, at no point did I think this was going to be a blowout either. It was like a 14-7 blowout. Like, that's what this was, where it was like Rutgers has no chance to win this because they can't move the ball.
Yeah, which is annoying because Kyle Manungai is so good. But this was, have this spread just be dead on and 7 points and it's a push was like kind of perfect, because it was like both teams had the ball for like Rutgers 29 minutes, Nebraska 31. Rutgers ran 69 plays, Nebraska ran 70. Rutgers had 264 total yards. Nebraska had 261. 3.8 yards per play versus 3.7. It was like the most, you know, 186 yards passing to 164, 78 yards rushing to 97. It was like just like the same crap, you know, that was going on. Nebraska got those two early rushing TDs, one in the first quarter, one in the second quarter. Didn't score after that. And like you said, Rutgers gets the backdoor cover push with the late touchdown there. But this was very Big Ten. This was very like, we're not trying to entertain anybody. This is just a game. It's going to happen. It will be talked about briefly, and then no one will think of it ever again.
Exactly.
I think that's where we are.
Extremely Big Ten.
This was very Big Ten. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and do questions. Alrighty, we're back here.
Actually, first we got to do another set of power rankings.
Oh, I'm totally sorry about that. Yeah, I'm trying to move this stuff through you.
I appreciate it, because I would like to get out of here in 9 minutes, but that does not look likely anymore.
It doesn't seem likely. I do have a show at 11, so we got to move a little further. Okay, so we'll go through these. Are mythical. If the Pac-12 still existed, these are what we would power rank them if they were in a single conference together. I know it seems weird having a bunch of teams in the same geographical area in the same conference. If that was the case, this is what our rankings would be. Number 12.
UCLA Bruins.
That's right, baby.
Number 11.
Stanford Cardinal.
Pretty sure they got just absolutely blasted again.
Who did they play?
Some ACC team. Was it Clemson? No, that was last week, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was last week.
Let's see. Hang on. Let's give the people the information they want.
Where are they?
They got, hang on. Because
they won at Syracuse, so.
They got absolutely murdered by Virginia Tech at home.
Oh, wow. That's bad.
Yeah.
It's funny. The ACC has had some big road wins, like cross country.
Yeah.
Where the Big Ten has not had that yet. But anyway, number 10, we got
Oregon State Beavers.
They beat Colorado State in double overtime.
Yeah, double OT. Number 9, we've got
Washington State Cougars.
They were on a bye.
Yeah. Number 8, we have
California Golden Bears.
Dude, all right, so I watched this whole game.
Pissed me off.
Cal was up 35-10, and then they kind of went into, like, I won't say they went into prevent. Miami made some adjustments in the second half that Cal didn't have an answer for.
And like, Cal was exhausted, I think,
too. Their defense looked wiped out, probably because they'd been up partying all night with the game day crew. But ultimately, they lost 39-38. There was, I thought, a badly missed targeting call. I would hate for a targeting call to decide a game. However, they absolutely targeted Fernando Mendoza. And that should have been called. I'm agnostic about the legal men downfield on the touchdown because I think it could be argued that was a lateral. And in that case, you don't have illegal men downfield.
Yeah.
But it might not have been a lateral. I haven't looked at the review. I just know people have said that.
Yeah. But boo Cal for blowing 25-point lead. Number seven.
USC Trojans.
Ass.
We got number six.
Washington Huskies.
They got a good win.
Mm-hmm.
Number five.
Utah Utes.
They're on a bye, I think, right? Did they
probably
play? Yeah.
Yeah.
Number four.
Arizona Wildcats.
They lost to Texas Tech.
Yeah, we probably should have dropped them.
We did.
Oh, we did?
They were number two, I think.
Oh, number three.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
They beat that ass. They beat Kansas ass. Kansas yeah. might be ass. What the hell's happening
I
with
know. Them? The Kansas didn't look very good. But a big, big win for Dillingham and ASU.
Sam Levitt's a good quarterback.
It's not bad. Number two.
Colorado Buffalo.
They run a bye.
And number one.
Oregon Ducks.
That's right, baby.
They spanked Jonathan Smith. Okay. Questions. We don't have any voicemails.
All right.
We do have Bobo, I think, was the first one.
Bobo?
The first. Oh, wait. Maybe we did this one. No, we didn't.
Is it the 22.5?
Yeah.
Okay.
22.5, .. 31 to 10 equals 21. Waterfowl, no concealed difference with Sparta. Dan Lanning fail hugely. Waterfowl silly season over. Big doom from Bobo.
Thank you for that, Bobo.
So I think he was saying he didn't cover the spread.
Yeah.
Which is true.
So true. This is a text message from Kevin from the IE. Ryan and Dave, I am watching the UCLA versus Penn State game, and Joel Klatt just said UCLA is better than their record says they are.
Yep.
My question for Dave is, if pianos also fall on the heads of announcers, I love the show and keep up the mediocre work. There were a few things said during that game that strained credulity. One of them was that. Another one was they kept talking about, like, they went over the top. I don't mind being complimentary of coaches because they've got relationships and all that kind of stuff. But
yeah.
they at one point they said, Eric Bieniemy, a genius offensive mind, like a genius. And I didn't mind it so much when they talked about, like, when they talk about, like, a Chip Kelly like that or Lincoln Riley like that. But I'm like, right. Look, I'm all for, you know, being fair and not being, you know, a dick on broadcasts about people. But, like, what's he done? Like, what offense has he run where you're like,
Patrick Mahomes, baby?
Yeah. yeah. What offense has he called plays in that has allowed for that evaluation? Anyway, Joel Klatt. I find him mostly usually pretty good.
I like Joel.
I think sometimes he gets a little bit strident would be the word. I think he gets a little over the top about certain things. Like he got really overblown about a holding call against UCLA in this game that negated an interception in the end zone. And they kept replaying the end of the play. But like the hold was like very clearly at the line of scrimmage or just soon after. Where Addison kind of held him and then he ran, which would disturb the timing on a timing route. So it just seemed like looking for a reason to get kind of, strident. But most of the time I find him okay. I think he's just kind of buttering up people to talk to pregame when he's saying stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. Riley versus Helton. Hello, champions. It's from Paul Webfoot. David and Ryan, I want you all to play a very quick guessing game for me. Through 32 games, Lincoln Riley, we've kind of talked about this, but is 22 and 10. Do you think Clay Helton was better, the same, or worse in the first 32 games? Listeners, feel free to play along at home. Yes, we already know the answer to this. If you said better, you're right. Noted USC coaching legend Clay Helton started 23-9, one game better than Lincoln Riley. Ryan, is it time to start drumming up some buyout money for the boosters? Maybe the next West Texas Mike Super Chat can go towards the buyout. Keep up the work. Paul from Webfoot.
Can I ask a serious question?
We need a lot of West Texas mics to get a buyout.
Realistically, when could USC fire Lincoln Riley?
Oh, that's good. I mean, it can't be this year.
They don't, because the buyout is insane, right? We don't know the exact figure, right? But it's
I don't know the exact figure, but I mean, he's making north of $10 million a year, and I believe it's like a guaranteed
a heavy percentage of the remainder of the contract.
There's it's probably north of $50 million after this year, or maybe even 60. So I don't like the fact that USC and all athletic departments now are going to have to pay $22 million out of their budget to just pay the players. I don't think they're rolling in dough like that they would want to even consider it. So
we're talking years still, right? Like no matter how this thing goes.
I mean, maybe after next year, but we don't even know what
I just mean, like, if the bottom falls out and they go 6-6 or 7-5 this year, and then next year it's similar.
I think they could consider it next year, but it would take like a big effort.
Yeah. Okay.
I think so. Just because I think he's just owed like $50 million or something.
You don't come up with that easily.
Yeah.
All right. This is from Oxnard Steve. This ship is going down. David, and Ryan. Well, another abysmal offensive line performance by the Trojans, this time against some Gophers. Game after game after game, quarterback Miller Moss has had no time to scan the defense and evaluate receivers who have had no time to run any routes downfield or get good separation from defenders, all because the offensive line has been more leaky than the Titanic. This is the third year in a row that USC's blockers, and I use that term loosely, have repeatedly allowed defenders to break through and harass the team's quarterbacks. For 2 years, Caleb Williams had the athleticism to scramble away from pressure, buying more time for receivers to get open, but Miller Moss only functions well as a pocket passer, so he either gets rushed to throw early or gets hit, or both. And if the Trojans were still in the Pac-12, they would be flagged for holding on just about every passing play. Thankfully, the Big Ten officials keep their handkerchiefs in their pockets. Offensive linemen need height, weight, strength, quick feet, communication and coordination with teammates, etc. Surely this must be a coaching problem in both recruiting and teaching. I feel this falls at the feet or in the lap or like a piano on the head of USC's offensive line coach Jim Henson, most famous for being the creator of the Muppets. And too many times, Trojan linemen look like they cannot move quickly enough because they have a hand up their ass. Let's get those Cardinal and Gold Muppets some feet. The powers that be some balls and fire Jim Henson. What? Josh? No, I am not kidding. Oh, Josh Henson is the offensive line coach. And you say he is the offensive coordinator as well? All the more reason to find someone else, but who would USC hire that could be a significant upgrade? Ryan, you follow the team. David, you're a smart guy. Maybe Brian Callahan, offensive line coach of the vaunted Golden Gophers. You know what they say. If you can't beat them, hire them. Oxnard Steve.
Offensive line play has been very bad. They got to figure out something. Lincoln Riley said it was good. It was not. I don't think it was. So, yeah, they got to do something. Lizard King said, Jesus fucking Christ, this is too long. It was a very long email.
It was a very, very long email.
Yeah.
I would say in response to some of that, I think if you're looking at the offensive line coach, you're looking too far down the thing. I think there's a fair argument that Caleb Williams made some chicken salad out of some chicken shit the last couple of years. And there's some flaws in this offensive line, but also I think a little bit in the scheme that Lincoln Riley runs that require a quarterback who can move pretty well. And I think, it wouldn't be the worst idea in the world, and it's not necessarily Miller Moss's fault, but maybe give that Maiava guy a shot and see what he looks like, because he can move better than Miller. And not that Miller Moss is like a pure statue, but he can't move like Caleb Williams or like Maiava. Maiava?
Yeah, Jane Maiava. A lot of USC fans want that. I don't agree with it.
But I don't think Miller Moss is the problem. I think the offense is the problem, but I think he might be a better fit for making something out of a bad call or a bad block.
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, if Riley thought he would, I think he'd put him in there. He knows quarterbacks pretty well.
Yeah, he's not a stubborn idiot.
Yeah, he's he replaced Spencer Rattler with Caleb Williams.
He's not a stubborn idiot. He's a stubborn idiot.
But he hasn't been stubborn about the quarterback thing that I've seen before. We'll see. Ryan, a different Ryan, on rankings, AP voters can be so lazy. Who misses who more? Michigan and Connor Stallions or Cal and the GOAT, a.k.a. Garbers?
they never lost, except for all those other times.
Yeah.
With Chase Garbers as their quarterback.
But I like that one, yes.
That's a good question.
Oh, Shane is.
Yeah, we already. That's the
Shane. We are. Yeah, thank you, Shane. He sent us the new. He sent us this.
UCLA Bruins.
Wow.
We're running late, and he's playing it again.
Yeah. Why not?
Here's from Dave. What is with the officiating this year? We got a Ryan and then a Dave, huh?
That's funny.
I only watched the Cal, Washington, and UCLA games yesterday, and each one had worse calls than I'd ever seen. For UCLA, I don't remember any details of the game, but recall being impressed they managed to cover despite the refs. Why was I watching this? Who decided not to put a good game in this time slot? In the Cal game, there was clear targeting with a launch in the crown of the helmet. It shouldn't matter if the player was defenseless. Also, they whistled the play dead with Ott having a clear shot at the end zone. And in Cal's last TD, linemen were blocking DBs in the end zone. Cal correctly identified that meant a QB draw was the only legal outcome of the play and ignored the receivers to box in Ward, yet the refs allowed a pass with multiple ineligible receivers downfield. Do refs have NIL deals? How much is Miami paying them? Wolverine and Husky fans were all confused by the delay of the game, followed by a false start on 4th and inches, both resulting in replaying the down without a penalty. Then there was the negated touchdown after the extra point. I went back and watched the TV replay to figure out what happened, but it was hidden by a commercial and the announcers glazed over it. In the stadium, both teams had lined up for the kickoff and the refs handed Grady Gross the ball. The band was playing Mush Huskies and the refs barely stopped him from kicking off to call in the review 2 plays back. How far back can they review now? Tis a slippery slope to taking the first quarter TDs off the board on the final drive. I heard USC had similar phone replays. How do we fix this? Thanks, Dave. Yeah, just generally.
It's been bad.
All things about Pac-12 refs, they suck. All refs are terrible. They've always been terrible. It was never a reason to go to a new league. It's a mess no matter where you go. I would say the feeling of corruption from Big Ten and ACC refs feels stronger than it ever did with Pac-12.
It kind of
does. With Pac-12, I felt, they just don't know what they're doing. Like, this is sad to watch. With Big Ten and ACC, they know what they're doing, and they're fucking us, is the way I would feel if I was the opposing fan.
Yeah, Lizard King says, Big Ten officials favor home teams. Visiting teams need to adjust. And Mississippi Trojan says, I'd rather no calls the way the Pac-12 refs would throw a flag if you touch the other team.
Yeah.
There's fewer flags, but there seems to be more consequential ones. There was one in the USC game where PJ Fleck called timeout. We go to commercial, come back from the timeout. So they got a timeout. USC was driving. It was a defensive timeout early in the third quarter. And then they come back and say, it wasn't a timeout. We gave them their timeout back because he argued that they were calling something for the defense and not actually calling a timeout. And I think it was Yogi Roth or someone on the broadcast said, that's an argument that coaches rarely win, but PJ Fleck won this one. So we got his timeout back. It didn't really matter, but it was just stuff like that. You're like, what? I saw the timeout. It happened. So yes, I think it's been bad, and it does seem to be like more purposeful bad as opposed to incompetent bad.
Yeah.
Even though people thought Pac-12 was purposely bad, but it was more incompetent. Last one, Max.
We have two more.
We do?
Yeah, one came in.
Champions, would you rather UCLA edition? Now that my beloved Trojans and Dave's somewhat beloved Bruins are licking their wounds in the not-so-fun Big Ten land, let's cheer everyone up with a quick game of would you rather UCLA edition. David, you've been given the opportunity to resurrect the UCLA football program from its current state of living in the upside down. Choose wisely. Would you rather, one, have prime Nick Saban as UCLA's head coach along with all of the recruiting juice that comes along with it, but you have to start each game spotting the opposing team 8 points. 1,000% Nick Saban.
Oh, are we answering each of these? I thought it was just pick one. Yeah, 100%. Okay, next one.
Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe just pick one. Or swap coaching staff with USC. 3, keep Deshaun Foster and the existing coaching staff in place, but swap UCLA's existing roster with the best Brett Hundley era roster.
Okay, if I'm picking one, it's number one.
Yeah, number one, I think, for sure. Yeah.
All right. Next up, this is from Rye Bookie or POC Jock. POC sponsorship, unpaid sponsorship by Ryan Abraham. Is betting on anything, anywhere, anytime not enough? Do you wish you could go 7-1, unlike your team? Do you too want a weekly ad read about yourself? Then introducing Rye Bookie, where you too can bet on the hottest action like 1, which coach will have a piano fall on their head? 2, will Vandy give your team a handy upside the head? 3, which media question will trigger Lincoln Riley? 4, will Cal's student body have a better running game through the college game day barriers than their players against Miami? 5, how many bathroom breaks will Chip Kelly take in a game? 6, is UCLA in Los Angeles? If your team's coach can make money off poor decisions, then why not you? If your administration won't take action on firing your coach, then you take the action on them not covering. RyeBookie, don't just sit by, bet with the Rye guy.
I like it. That's pretty cool.
I love it.
Unpaid sponsorship. So we should get out of here.
We should. We should be done.
Well, I hope it's a fun show. I don't. We might skip this week's Thursday show. It's not. There's not a lot of important games in the conference this week, so maybe we'll just skip.
There's
it.
There's nothing consequential happening.
Yeah, we'll just skip the preview.
I think we just punt and head on to next week, kind of like Kirk Ferentz.
Week 7, we'll just forget. We'll look at week 8 in a little bit. I'll go on vacation, and because there's not much going on. So yeah, no, that was a joke. We'll do a show Thursday I might not be able to do Thursday. So we'll do a show this week and it should be a lot of fun previewing everything that's going on. So that'll wrap it up for David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoy the show and we will talk to you next time.